This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Matt Addison, and on this special episode of the show, I'm going to be charting the career of Fabinho, finding out what shaped the Brazilian midfielder as he made his way to Anfield and how he became the player he is today. The 27-year-old has made well over 100 appearances for Liverpool now and has proven invaluable this season as a central defender. But there's no doubt that he's been a big miss for the Reds in central midfield, where hopefully the peak years of his career can be spent. Jurgen Klopp, Pep Linders and the rest of the Liverpool coaching staff love him. He's a big part of the squad and he could even become one of those players to make that step up into the leadership group once Gini Wijnaldum departs. Before signing for Liverpool for a fee of £39 million, the number 6 played as part of that brilliant Monaco side under Leonardo Jardim. He'd been signed by the Ligue 1 side from Rio Ave in Portugal, where he didn't play a single game, but was loaned to Real Madrid. And as I explore with my first guest, Brazilian football expert Thiago Ferreira, it all started for him at a small Sao Paulo club called Paulinho.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Okay, Thiago, I mean, first and foremost, tell me a little bit about Fabinho's early career. When he first came through in Brazil, where was it that he came through? Which club was it at? And what was his reputation like? Did people know straight away that he was going to be a big player?
Okay, well, at the beginning, I guess Fabinho had a good period at the basic divisions in soccer at Paulinha. Paulinha is a small club in São Paulo. He was discovered by Fluminense at that time as a right back, right side. And what is very interesting, if you see him now, where he is playing, he doesn't look so promising at that time, but already has a good technique and physical performance. But Fluminense already had two backs. Igor Julião is still the number one of his position in the club, but not a player much loved by the supporters. And Wallace, Fluminense is a club with not so much money, but is always trying to become champion of the most important leagues here. And to finance this kind of a challenge, they sell a lot of young players whenever they can. So Fabinho was one of them. And by that time, no supporter of Fluminense or executive of the team was worried. And I guess that this happened because they don't know They don't know Fabinho very well. Fabinho, as I said, was a right back, but he already had experience to play as a defender midfielder. But I guess they didn't knew that a lot. They didn't practice. They didn't change the position of Fabinho that time. They just see Fabinho as an investment, not a player.
Do you think they regret that now? Do you think that they maybe would have valued him differently, maybe if they'd have known that he was probably better in a different position?
For sure. Because if you look about Fluminense at the last years, at the position of a midfield defender, they changed the position 3-4 times since Fabinho left. So they could take the player. They may have a better value of when sell him. They sell a player who were not playing at Fluminense. He was not at the 11, and he was seen by the supporter or executive as an irrelevant player in Fluminense that time. It's unbelievable if you see that now.
Why was it that he moved to Portugal and then immediately was sent out on loan? What was the reason for that?
I am not sure, but he moved to Rio Ave in a very, very cheap business for the Portuguese. I guess something about 250,000 euros. So probably Rio Ave never thinking Fabinho as a player to play, but as an investment. It looks unbelievable today, but it happens with South American players every season. Many of them gave up Europe because they could not resist to get on a club and a red salad. Fabinho is the kind of resilient person that Europe loves. I also need to remember that Fabinho never complains about Rio Ave. When a player gets in a club, arrives in a club, and did not play, he always complains. He always say, "Ah, when I was at Rio Ave, I could have more opportunities." Fabinho never did that. So I guess it was an mutual agreement. Fabinho complains more about Fluminense than Rio Ave, and he played at Fluminense. He was not one of the most important, but he had chance. So I think it was a kind of mutual agreement. It was good for them both.
Why is it that lots of young Brazilian players move to Europe so quickly? Is that a big problem in Brazil, that they move away so soon and maybe you don't get to see the best years of them in Brazil? They've already moved to Europe by that time.
Well, I will develop it, but about the second question, I guess it's a worse problem for football, not just Brazil. I guess that the first reason is money. The second reason is money too. And maybe the third reason is to look for a more competitive league. But players who go to Russian or Ukraine league are not exactly realizing a dream of an athlete, right? Also, we should remember that many teams in America need to sell young players who are just promises to hire another that you know what he can deliver. A young player needs some time, needs to improvement, needs a patience to be developed, and there is not so many clubs that can give that for the young player. So I don't agree with this. I guess we are selling the future to play the present. And the result is in national team of Brazil. Our players doesn't complete their formation as athletes, as soccer players here, and they doesn't develop, for example, the dribbling. Just the pass the ball. The both are fundamentals for football, but just one makes Brazilian players look different. So, of course, that's the case of Fabinho. Fabinho was always a defensive player. But for example, I'm very worried about Vinicius Junior, about other players who are selling so much younger here in Brazil. Neymar arrives in Barcelona. He was about 20, 21. He was already a reality when he leaves Brazil. But Vinicius Junior, for example, leaves Brazil with 17, 18 years. He was starting to have opportunities in Flamengo. So I guess that's the what always worry me, that we are sending players to Europe and Europe can't develop the dribbling. Europe will develop the pass, the position, but it's very, very fundamental that they take a little bit more time here in Brazil. And it's worse for the national team. That's why when you say, when you're going to see the best five center forwards of the world, well, we don't have any Brazilian in that. And the most close Brazilian of that, I guess, it would be Pedro or Gabriel Jesus. Gabriel Jesus, it's an important player of Manchester, but he's not a kind of star, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Fabinho is not the only one who's moved from Brazil to Portugal. What is the reason that lots of players, when they're young, go to Portugal? Is it because of the language? Is there maybe some other similarity there?
Portugal, in fact, it's a real common destination of Brazilian players. But I'm not sure if it's just because of the language. I guess Portugal pay more attention to Brazil and they have just two big teams. So the level of a player in first league of Portugal is more easy to attend than, for example, Premier League. Premier League, the level is just too high for some Brazilian players. If a Brazilian player are not so much young and it's not on A division, he can play at Premier League. But in Portugal, yeah. Portugal have small clubs, the Primeira Liga, the first league of Portugal. It is not so competitive, just two clubs. So I guess that's the reason number one. But also to Portugal, nowadays, it's very cheap to buy a young or a not so much younger Brazilian player and see what happens. And if it didn't work well, you can send it back to Brazil, you can sell to another country. It's very cheap today.
Yeah, I'm sure that was part of the thinking with Fabinho as well. But he's gone on to be one of those players that's developed a lot and become a huge star for Liverpool and for Brazil as well at times. How much of a surprise is it that he has got to that level? Did you ever think when he was sort of a younger player that he could get to that standard, or is he far sort of ahead of where you thought he might be?
Not really, because he didn't play so much in Fluminense. But when we noted him in Monaco, we realized he became another player. That sometimes happens with Brazilian players and another South American players. I guess one example that comes to my mind now is Felipe Melo. Felipe Melo in Brazil, when he started, he was not a reliable player and became a real good defensive midfielder in Europe. He plays a lot for Inter de Milan. And I guess sometimes that happens. And I guess we don't say that a lot, but in the case of Fabinho, we must send some compliments to Leonardo Jardim. He was maybe the responsible number one to change Fabinho to a good player for a very good player.
Yeah, definitely. And just to finish then, I want to ask you about a couple of other Brazilian defensive midfielders as well. Obviously, Fernandinho and Casemiro are both players that have come up against Liverpool this season. How does Fabinho compare to those two players now? Because we've seen in previous years that maybe they've been preferred over him. Is there a recognition that he is maybe as good as those two players these days?
Fernandinho was in the match of Brazil and Germany, 7-1. So I guess after that match, he could be in national team again. But he is, and I guess his time is gone. I think Casemiro is a very, very, very good player. And he's still very competitive. But I guess that Fabinho is the future of the national team. So if I was Tite, he is going to be in the 11 players. But Tite had, in always his career, Tite has some trouble to stop using some players that he trusts too much. That happened in Brazil, and I guess this is happening now in national team. And I guess Fabinho will not be one of the 11 trustful players of Tite, but to me, it's already a Fabinho's era with the Brazilian shirt.
Thiago, thank you very much for your insight. We appreciate your time, and I'm sure Fabinho is one certainly that's 100% appreciated at Liverpool, even if not in Brazil.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
After leaving Brazil, Fabinho moved to Portugal, a familiar path for South American players. At Rio Ave, he was there with fellow Brazilian Ederson, now at Manchester City, plus another top-class goalkeeper in Jan Oblak, now, of course, at Atletico Madrid. Current Wolves boss Nuno Espirito Santo was also their manager at the time. As Thiago has already explained, though, Fabinho never played a game for Rio Ave, moving them more as a business opportunity. Either he'd become a good enough player for them, or they'd move him on for a profit. It was the latter that ended up happening, but not before a loan move to the Spanish giants, as author of Revitalising Real Madrid, Scott Martin, explains. Okay, Scott, so why was it that Fabinho ended up at Real Madrid and obviously their B team as well? It sort of seemed like a strange transfer move for a young Brazilian from Portugal to make.
It really was an odd case. And when you look at this specific transfer, he only spent a month at Rio Ave before they decided to move him on to Real Madrid. And when you look at this instance, I think you have to look at the influence of Jorge Mendes, super agent, and his connection with Jose Mourinho. So Mourinho was at the time in his last season at Real Madrid. He'd heard word of this very talented young Brazilian who had just come to the club. And, you know, I think there was just a sense that Fabinho was just too big for Rio Ave. So he needed a chance to impress elsewhere. So that's where he did secure the move to Real Madrid, but they didn't really need him in the first squad. Alvaro Arbeloa was performing at a high level. Fabio Coentrao could deputize at right back, as could Sergio Ramos if they needed someone to step in. So it was more of a project of evaluating this young talent and seeing where he fit. So I think that's where the oddity comes in. It was more of a speculative transfer than trying to fit him into the puzzle right away, because obviously there just wasn't a fit.
I think it's really interesting that you mentioned his agent, Mendes, there. I mean, normally we see, certainly with his clients, that there's a real specific route mapped out. You look at certain players that, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, is one of his players. And, you know, he very much decided that he wanted to go to Real Madrid. That was from Real Madrid to Juventus. And that was sort of decided in conjunction with his agent. And they worked that out. It was, you know, very much a pathway that had been in his mind for a little while, I think. This is a bit different, though, isn't it? I mean, Fabinho, as you say, it was a bit more speculative. He sort of went to Real Madrid to do his development. Normally, you'd think about it of being the other way around. Normally, Real Madrid would buy him as a more finished product. Was this kind of from the Mendes end, or was it from the Real Madrid end? Was this sort of transfer, was it something that came about because they wanted to move on from that trend of maybe buying the established product and moving more towards youth, or was this more of an exception really to the rule that they thought that they could just take advantage of?
Yeah, so I think you do have to look at it from both perspectives. For Mendes, he knew he had something in Fabinho, that he needed to move on to a bigger club. He needed that opportunity. From Real Madrid's perspective, they did have Arbeloa there, and he was performing at, you know, a quality level. But I think they wanted someone who could bring that right side to the next level. So that's where there was the evaluation of Fabinho. But you also have to remember, that's the year that Danny Carvajal spent at Bayer Leverkusen, his one season at the German side. And within that transfer, there were clauses, buyback clauses, in each of the first 3 years. So Carvajal performed at such an exceptional level in the Bundesliga, was voted as the third best right back in the league, that Real Madrid had to buy him back. And that when he did come back to the squad, that there wasn't necessarily that fit for Fabinho. And there's also the other oddity that he was a 6'2" right back. You look at the other outside backs in the Real Madrid squad, and you know, he stuck out like a sore thumb. So I think for Real Madrid, there was this idea that they needed an upgrade at right back, but they wanted to test these young players, Fabinho, Danny Carvajal, and see who would emerge as the victor and claim that spot. And to Carvajal's credit, he put in the work, performed at a high level, and secured that move back. Now, for Fabinho, he did perform exceptionally well at Castillas. We saw that Jose Mourinho was frequently inquiring as to his development, his progress, and he rewarded him at the end of the season with a 14-minute appearance against Malaga. And, you know, at the time of his entry, it was a 5-2 blowout, and in 14 minutes, Fabinho managed to pick up an assist. So granted, a simple setback pass to Di Maria, who did the work and got the goal, but he at least got that little bit of a reward for overall a very strong season with that second team. So it's just a matter of not finding a fit within the club structure.
Was there any indication at that time that he might go on and play in midfield? I know obviously at the time he was very much a right back. He played, I think, the majority of his games for Monaco as a right back as well. But was there any sort of sign that he might be able to fit into the team in a different position? Or was that really not something that was considered?
Certainly not in midfield. So with Casillas, he had some opportunities to play center back, but he was never a player who was viewed as a midfielder, or even a holding mid. So that does come as a surprise to Real Madrid, and even when Liverpool visited Madrid in the Champions League, we saw Florentino Perez ask him, "You played right back for us, didn't you?" So there was a little bit of shock that, you know, this tall, lanky, shy Brazilian right back had made a transition, a seamless transition, into a holding mid role. And, you know, it's not the first time this has happened with Real Madrid. You know, a more recent example is the case of Marcos Llorente.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you about him as well. I mean, you can list off the names who played with Fabinho around that time. I mean, Casemiro was in the Castilla team as well. Hesse, Morata, Vasquez, Nacho. It was a really talented group at that time, wasn't it? And Diego Llorente as well, Marcos Llorente. I suppose they probably have a couple of regrets about a couple of those players at the very least.
Yeah, definitely. I would imagine Fabinho and Marcos Llorente sit at the very top of the list. With each of those cases, you know, they knew they had a player who could, if not give them depth, who could at the very least play at a reasonably high level. So with Real Madrid and their relationship and their analysis of these two players, there was just an inability to see beyond the immediate. You know, Fabinho started as a right back, but, you know, they noted the oddity of having a 6'2" right back, but then they never really acted upon it. They gave him some chances at center back, which you'd assume could be a fit, but there was never that transition to, you know, maybe this guy is a midfielder. Maybe he could play the six. He's got the defensive qualities. He's very sound there. He's an intelligent player. They noted how dedicated he was to the tactical side of the game. You know, was a great student, but there was never that identification that his physical profile, as well as his skill set, could apply elsewhere. And it's the same case with Llorente. You know, he, oddly enough, he was a six at Real Madrid, and now he's gone on to Atletico Madrid, their crosstown rival, and now he is blossoming into a world-class striker. So, and he actually has the top speed in a match in La Liga this season. He just said it in the 91st minute. So, I mean, it is odd that the club has whiffed on both of these cases, not fully evaluated the physical profiles and the skill sets available to each player, and then found the right tactical fit. So, you know, I can forgive them for not seeing the necessity of placing these players in those specific roles, you know, right back for Fabinho, six for Llorente, but then why not look somewhere else, you know, especially once you've done a full analysis of their ability.
I think Llorente is a particularly interesting one. He was obviously the player who knocked Liverpool out of the Champions League last season with Atletico Madrid, so I'm sure from a Reds perspective, they would have quite liked Real Madrid to have kept hold of him. Maybe he could have knocked them out this season, in fairness, but I think he's a really interesting one. I suppose with Fabinho and with Llorente now, I mean, have Real Madrid learned their lessons from these sort of players? Have they started to do things maybe slightly differently now with one or two of the current group to make sure that they don't lose out on these talents? Because I think it's fair to describe both Llorente and Fabinho as world-class players, whatever position that they're put in. I think Real Madrid must have a lot of regrets there, really.
I think there's definitely regret there. I don't know if there's necessarily maybe not the need for those players in that moment. You know, even in the case of Fabinho, we have Casemiro, who, you know, we argue is the best six in the world. So, you know, why have two top three number sixes in the same squad, especially if that forces you to reposition Toni Kroos? So yeah, you know, there's probably some regrets, maybe more along the lines of the financial impact. You know, they certainly could have purchased Fabinho and then, you know, sold him off at a much higher price or received any recuperation from him. But we do see a little bit of a willingness to try players in new positions. Lucas Vasquez, a career right forward, has spent the majority of the season at right back. Unfortunately, he's set to miss the remainder of the season with the knee injury. But there was very little drop-off between Vasquez and Dani Carvajal at that right-back position, which was pivotal in our Champions League progression. And then also just the club staying in the La Liga race. So, yeah, from that perspective, I think we are starting to see players identifying new roles. Fede Valverde is another player, career six. He's now an attacking mid and occasionally plays right forward. So yeah, I think that the analysis is of a higher quality now, and they're showing a willingness to go outside of the box.
And just finally then on Fabinho, has it been at all a surprise to you that he's sort of flourished into the player that he was, or were the signs there that maybe if you just found that right spot for him and give him the time to develop, maybe he could have become what he's become now?
I think the latter. So when you look at the way people spoke about him within Real Madrid, and even just the quick transfer from Rio Ave to Real Madrid, his coach at Rio Ave was Nuno Espirito Santo. So, you know, coach who's now at a very elite level. Jan Oblak and Ederson were the goalkeepers in that squad. So, I think everybody knew he was a player for the future. He was someone who could play at an elite level, you know, be world-class in whatever position he ended up playing. I think the surprise is just that it was at the six, and, you know, credit to the coaches who gave him that role. And also credit to the player for taking that intellectual initiative to put in the time, put in the work, put in the studying to make that role his own. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of Fabinho just because of the work rate that he's put in to his positional transition and running with it to become a world-class player.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
After Real Madrid came AS Monaco, on loan for the first two seasons, then as a permanent player for three. And that was where his reputation really began to flourish. Alongside exciting players like Bernardo Silva and Kylian Mbappe, Fabinho was part of one of the most exciting young teams to take to the field in the Champions League in the modern era. He wasn't perhaps a standout name, but he was a standout player, as French football expert Rich Allen explains. Okay, Rich, thanks for joining me. First and foremost, why was Monaco the right club, or was it the right club even, for Fabinho, do you think, to take the next step in his development?
Well, I mean, it was clear that his future wasn't with Rio Ave. His time at Real Madrid wasn't anything particularly to write home about. Monaco, at the time he joined, were under their new ownership, the Russian ownership. They'd just won the Ligue 1 title, back to the top flight. So probably as bigger and as exciting project as you could possibly get. He's arrived at the same time as the likes of Falcao, the likes of James Rodriguez. So it really was a summer of big signings. So I'd imagine for a player of him at his age, that would have been a very exciting opportunity to sort of stake a claim as a regular first-team player.
Did he get into the team straight away? Did he sort of play immediately? Was that even the plan, or was it more a case of building that squad? Obviously, you mentioned a couple of the other names that were in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he was brought in initially. He was brought in as a defensive midfielder, as we sort of all know him as now. But at the time he was when he was brought in, he did play regularly. I think he probably played more than many thought he would, but he was playing at right back. And actually, it was a position he was fairly familiar with. But I was when I first saw him, I was surprised at how comfortable he looked. You know, not that much experience under his belt at that age, but I think showed plenty of promise. But yeah, he did play quite regularly from the get-go, really.
And how much of that time was in midfield? You say he played a lot at right back. I know he'd done sort of similar when he was in Brazil. Was it kind of that he was brought in as a right back and that's sort of where he played the majority of the time?
No. Well, sorry, right back was where the defensive midfield he hardly played. I mean, you could probably count on one hand the amount of games he played in his first sort of two, three seasons. It really took the arrival of Leonardo Jardim in 2014, for the 2014-15 season, for him to start that move back to defensive midfield as his preferred position.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Jardim was a huge influence on him. What do you think sort of made him move him into midfield, and how quickly was that a success?
Well, I mean, it was pretty much an immediate success. I mean, very quickly, he was partnered with Timoue Bakayoko. And that partnership was just fantastic. I mean, that team that Jardim constructed, which obviously went on then to win the Ligue 1 title in 2016-2017, I can't think of many, certainly Ligue 1 teams, that have been such a joy to watch. Everybody knew their role. And that partnership of Fabinho and Bakayoko, I was particularly a huge fan of their understanding of when to go forward, when not, that they both, you know, they both were comfortable, one going forward, one staying back, and then vice versa. It was a partnership that really blossomed. So yeah, definitely the arrival of Jardim, the arrival of Bakayoko to partner him, were significant in his sort of rapid rise, I think.
I think Bakayoko is interesting. I think a lot of Liverpool fans will sort of remember him more for his time at Chelsea, and obviously that didn't quite work out. But this was a Bakayoko that was a very different player. What sort of player was he, and how did that sort of mesh with the sort of strengths that Fabinho had?
Yeah, so while Fabinho was perhaps the more calm player, he was a bit more measured in his play. Probably a little bit more comfortable on the ball. Bakayoko then was the sort of muscle, if you like. He was the one then that was going around with the, you know, with the big challenges, with the tackles, was not afraid to cliched as it is, to get stuck in. It was just a partnership that really, really worked well. They really, really complemented each other, I think, was the big, big factor to the success.
Is there a sort of similar player at Liverpool now, do you think, in terms of the type of midfielder that Bakayoko was? I'm just trying to sort of get an idea of how Fabinho grew into this player that we see now when he's playing in midfield.
It's difficult, actually, because, I mean, straight off the bat, I would probably suggest you'd probably be looking at someone like Henderson. But I think Henderson probably is a little bit more comfortable on the ball than Bakayoko was in that partnership. But Henderson is more of the sort of vocal, perhaps the more obvious player. I think Bakayoko, when you watch them play, Bakayoko, you could spot more easily in terms of how he played. I think Fabinho was very easy for him to sort of be overlooked slightly. And I think that played to his advantage, definitely. But yeah, I think in terms of who Liverpool have got, probably someone like Henderson, although Henderson just has that little bit extra, I think, than Bakayoko had at the time.
You mentioned there that Fabinho was slightly overlooked in that team. I mean, it was some team that he played in. I mean, you look at Falcao, James Rodriguez, Moutinho, Cavalho, Bernardo Silva, Benjamin Mendy, and Kylian Mbappe were in there as well. I mean, was he as big a part of that team as those other big names at the time?
I think when you look back on that team, I think you really do see how important Fabinho was. I mean, what was really noticeable, I think, for his whole time, really, at Monaco, was just his consistency. You know, season after season, he would play pretty much every single game and pretty much every single minute. I mean, that championship-winning team, again, you could probably count on one hand the amount of games that he missed. I think it was only like three or four games that he missed, and the vast majority of them he played every single minute. So I think looking back, yeah, you definitely see just how important he was. You know, with all that attacking talent, as you said, with Bernardo Silva, with Thomas Lemar, with Falcao, with Mbappe, you needed that bit of substance in midfield that can give that defence the protection because of just how attacking those front four are. And I think Fabinho was absolutely superb at doing that.
I suppose that sort of leads into it, to how he's become the player he is at Liverpool, because I think one of the biggest things in a number six role in a Jurgen Klopp team is that you essentially have to do the job of two players. I mean, it sounds from the sort of players that were in that Monaco team and the way that Jardim set them up that he would have essentially had to have done that at Monaco as well. He would have been left very exposed, for example, on the counter-attack with all of those players in front of him.
Yeah, I think so. I think, well, it was really that, as I say, going back to that partnership with Bakayoko, really, it's the fact that they could do the job of two players, but they did it sort of almost on a job share basis. You know, when that partnership where you had one sitting back, one going forward, if they needed to swap, they'd swap. What I think has been interesting to see, the Fabinho at Monaco and the Fabinho at Liverpool, the Fabinho at Monaco, We did see him get forward a little bit more than we perhaps have seen so far with his time at Liverpool. Obviously, that's been hampered by having to play out of position and whatnot. But he certainly provided a little bit more going forward. So I think Liverpool fans can perhaps look at, there is, silly as it sounds, there is even a little bit more to come perhaps from Fabinho if they need him to play that sort of role.
He was one of the last to leave that Monaco side as it sort of began to get dismantled. Was that a coincidence, do you think, or was that more a case of Liverpool spotting something that maybe one or two others didn't?
It was probably a little bit unfortunate for Fabinho, I think, given his option, when you saw the players that left that season after they won the title. You saw the likes of Mendy leave, you saw the likes of Bernardo Silva leave, you saw Mbappe leave. And perhaps most significantly for him, you saw Bakayoko leave as well. I would imagine there was a part of him that thought, this is something that I perhaps need to look at moving on from. You know, look to exploit the sort of raised profile that he had as a result of the previous season. So perhaps there was a little bit of disappointment in for Fabinho because of that. And I think the following season we saw that. He certainly wasn't anywhere near the heights as he was in that championship-winning season. Partly, of course, because so many players had left, and you know, Bakayoko, his co-midfielder, had gone. So there's perhaps a little bit of understanding why his season was a bit below par. But I would imagine a little bit of disappointment played his part as well. You know, there were strong rumours that summer of, you know, clubs linked with him and getting the move. Just never materialised. Obviously, he saw all those big names leave, and he was the one that was sort of left behind. Really, sort of him and Lemar were the two big names that were sort of left that we all expected to leave. Falcao perhaps was a little bit different, but certainly Lemar and Fabinho were the names that sort of got held behind. And maybe that was, you know, that was Monaco's plan. You know, they couldn't just make wholesale changes of the entire team. They needed to keep something back. So the following season, 2017-2018, Fabinho didn't quite hit his heights, but I think there were definitely extenuating circumstances for that.
And just finally then, and what have you sort of made of him in a Liverpool shirt? We've spoken about a few players in that Monaco team. Maybe Lemar maybe quite hasn't hit the heights that we thought he might when he left. Others like Bernardo Silva have gone on and progressed even further. Where does Fabinho sort of sit for you? Is he sort of doing what you expected him to do once he'd left?
He is doing what I expect. I mean, ultimately, what Liverpool fans have seen most is just sheer versatility. You know, to have played such a long time at centre-back, which is, I don't know if he ever played centre-back prior to the move at Liverpool, to have taken up that position, and by and large, you know, he's been okay. Of course, he's not going to be outstanding, and you look at the players that he's having to replace, he's never going to live up to those standards, of course not. But I think what they've shown is his versatility. I think they see his commitment. I think they can see what he can do on the ball. And as I said earlier, I do genuinely think there is more to come. But I've been quietly impressed. I haven't been totally blown away yet because I don't know if he's necessarily had that regular time in his position with a regular partner. I think once that happens, we'll see that 100% Fabinho. I think we're sort of seeing 85% at the moment, which is still very good. But I do think, yeah, we just have that little bit more to come. And as I said, I think, by giving him that stable midfield, I think potentially we then see a little bit more from him going forward as well. And put him on penalties as well. His record on penalties in France was ludicrous.
Yeah, I'm sure Mohamed Salah might have something to say about that. But yeah, an excellent point. A really, really good penalty taker as well. Rich, thank you very much for your time this morning. Much appreciated.
You're very welcome.
There's absolutely no doubt that Fabinho is one of the most important players that Liverpool have. And at 27, he'll continue that for several seasons yet. Now closing in on having played three full campaigns for Liverpool, Fabinho has already won the Champions League and the Premier League. But no doubt he'll want to add to that at Anfield, even if Liverpool do miss out on the top four this season. There's little doubt either that he'll want to add to his 12 international caps for Brazil, a very small number for someone so talented. His first three seasons have been very, very impressive, to say the least. But Fabinho will be hoping it gets even better as his Liverpool career continues to fly.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.